Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Dr. Carl, he's our science communicator and a popularizer. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you, Dr. Howard.
So we need to talk about cold water immersion because it's all the rage. My whole Instagram is showing me these very well-built guys and women all immersing themselves in cold water, excruciatingly painful, even though they're pretending otherwise. And then they're telling me that I'm going to get that body if I do it. Am I?
Ah, how much do they offer to charge you?
Well, yes, that's always the question, because they'll take me through this process for a very small fee.
Oh, a small fee?
Okay, well, I don't know. I haven't inquired as to the quantum. But is it a thing? Is it this cold water immersion, is it really good for us?
Yes and no. So some people from the University Hospital of North Norway, okay, that's up cold, and the Arctic University of Norway, another cold place, they got together and they surveyed all of the available literature. And there were about 140 papers. Right. And the conclusion that they came to was that, yes, in the sense that if you spend a lot of time swimming in cold water, and it all depends on how cold it is, you know, like 24 degrees doesn't count, right? What it will do is reduce some of the white fat and give you a different sort of fat called brown fat, which actually helps burn calories. But the overall goodness and benefits that you get from it were they due to actually swimming in the cold water? When they looked at the 140 papers, they could not find a yes or a no. All they could come up with was, well, on average, the people who did cold water swimming were a bit healthier, but they also did other things like eat good food, and they'd ride bicycles, and they'd do a bit more exercise, and none of the studies had corrected or compensated for those other confounding effects. So the bottom line is, we know it'll do something to your body fat, whether it'll actually make you healthier, dunno. On the other hand, if it's cheap enough, go for it. But on the other hand, I have seen studios in the USA that'll charge you thousands of dollars where you get to sit in a box with your head poking out of it and then you get hit with ice. Oh my God, no, that's too expensive. But if it's fairly cheap, like, here, jump in the water and give me $2, yeah, okay, right, that's cheap enough.
Right, absolutely. But it's so true what you say, because people that are doing this are doing all sorts of other things as well. This is their life. So they're eating well, they're exercising, and this is just a part of it. You can't be a fat slob eating whatever you want to eat and then get into cold water and think your life is going to change. It'll flash before you, but it probably won't change.
Good point.
So absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Let's talk about public grief.
Yes, it's a really strange thing. You can understand personal grief. Mm-hmm. Your dog died, or you missed out on a job, or maybe something bad happened to a person in your family whom you knew and you related to. But how can you mourn for somebody whom you have never met in your whole life? And specifically, we're talking about the death of Queen Elizabeth II. And there's been a vast public outpouring of grief. And you know it's genuine because people have been waiting in a queue for hours and sometimes 24 hours. Mm. It could be that there's somebody offering to pay them to make it look good, but I kind of doubt that. And this sort of relationship is called a parasocial relationship. It's not like the normal sort of relationship you have with somebody where you give and take, but it's with somebody who you never meet. They're a celebrity, a well-known public figure, and that's different from a reciprocal arrangement. And there's two things going on. One is the loss of possibility, because you're thinking, oh, that person, I really like what they were doing, and they would go on to do more good things, and then suddenly they can't do any more good things. Mm. And the other thing is that you've kind of identified with them. There's a special word called introjection. Now, I've never heard of that. Have you heard of introjection?
I'm looking at that.
Introjection is a word they use in psychology where they say, oh, there's that person, and I really like the way that they do this and that, and they go swimming in cold water or not or whatever. And you kind of invest in their identity, and you kind of copy what they do. And so that could be the second reason that people were grieving for Queen Elizabeth, because they thought, oh, well, she's kind of neutral, and she very rarely says anything bad about anybody. Like, I mean, that's a really good quality.
Right.
And so they think, oh, well, I'll try and do that too. So they're sort of part of the reasons why we have this real public grief. But it's different from personal or reciprocal grief, because that normally is related to a person that you know, and there might be things happening such as, oh, I can't bear to touch anything in their room, I'll just leave it the way it is for the next 50 years or something like that. So this is a short-term grief that comes and then it goes.
It's really fascinating, but is it a good thing? I mean, I would think it is positive to publicly mourn somebody who has attributes that are admirable, the hardworking, whatever it would be that people identify with. Surely it would be a good thing to mourn the death of somebody with what we perceive as good values.
Yeah, so long as it doesn't go to the stage of having major psychological effects on them. Like, if you've got a persistent and pervasive grief response where you end up, for example, having intense emotional pain like sadness or guilt or anger,
okay.
So long as you don't go into that, then that grief can be a way of celebrating that person and saying, well, they'll be a role model. Like, they never said anything bad about anybody. They might have been part of a government that did things, but out of their mouth in public, they tended not to say bad things. And you think, well, that's a good thing. I'll stop saying bad things about the person next door or across the road or whatever.
It's very, very interesting, and I guess in that way it's positive, as long as you say, it's contained. If it goes to the extreme, that's when it could be a reflection of somebody's own personal challenges, maybe.
Yeah, and you do find that in married couples who have been together for a long time, and sometimes the death can lead to terrible things where they don't look after themselves, they let the house run down, and they actually suffer. Like, the grieving is part of getting through it, but if it lasts for more than 6 months and your own emotional and physical health suffers, then that sounds like a bad thing.
Mm. Yeah, Roland says, does public grief not have elements of hysteria, however mild they may be? But is that bad? Why would that, you know, standing in a line for 11 hours might seem excessive to us here in South Africa or you in Australia, but if that's a way to show respect, is it bad? I find it difficult to see it as a negative, really.
No, I don't really understand hysteria. Like, I have no idea what happened with all of you people in Africa, and when Nelson Mandela died, was there a public grieving for him?
Well, there was. There certainly was, and in fact, whilst he was very, very ill, many of us went past his home. Our kids wrote notes that we left outside his, and it was a way also of educating our children to show respect for somebody who had done so much in his lifetime and was in many ways the epitome to me of so many of the values that we laud. So you know, there definitely was a lot of public different ways that people showed respect for Mandela when he passed away.
I don't think, for me, hysteria means a combination of irrational, and hey, love is irrational, but also can lead to a bad outcome, and I don't think that led to a bad outcome. And then it suddenly reminded me that I actually helped get Nelson Mandela out of jail myself, in the sense that I, in the 1970s, protested at football teams coming to Australia saying, how can you come here when Nelson Mandela is in jail? And so I did my little bit of street protest to try and do something for him, and I have no idea whether it helped or not, but I had to do something.
Well, I would like to think that it definitely did. In fact, I'm pretty sure it did. Maybe not that one person standing at one protest, but the collective certainly did make a big difference.
Sure. Oh, gee, we're getting a bit sad here, Dr. Howard.
I'm sorry. Okay, so in less than a minute, tell us about the DART spacecraft.
Okay, so 66 million years ago, a big rock wiped out the dinosaurs and heated the planet to hotter than the inside of an oven for a couple of days, and most of the creatures on Earth died. And we've just had a first dress rehearsal or a test run of running a spacecraft into a rock to see if we could divert it in case it was on a direct collision path. And so far, it looks as though we may have diverted it. We may have succeeded. Hooray for us.
Absolutely. And there we go. It is about to go 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem. Dr. Carl, thank you as always.